Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us. We're live worldwide on the award-winning CUTV News Radio, live a service of CUTV News Radio, the broadcast center. It is 11 a.m. Eastern. A pleasure to have you with us all across the United States, as well as Canada and around the world. We have an international, global audience who tunes into our award-winning broadcast series from multiple shows every day, with amazing expert guests who are so passionate about the work that they do, skilled experts who care, who are empathetic, and who are sharing their stories with us. And we're so honored to have Dr. Kimberly Rehack back with us here on CUTV News Radio Live as we continue our series with her today. It is June 12, 2019, Wednesday at the time of this broadcast, live globally, but we also archive all of our shows. So you can hear this episode again and again. You can share it with family, friends, colleagues, those you think who will benefit greatly from our conversation today with Dr. Kimberly Rehack. As again, it is a real pleasure to have her back with us. You know, she is a certified behavior analyst, and she's co-founder of the International Institute for Behavioral Development, which is an organization which has provided many different types of services throughout the years. Formerly, one of the responsibilities of the organization was to help design learning environments in all of their forms and to help implement services where children and adults could thrive. They provided educational, psychological, and behavioral health and support services using precise techniques to interpret behavior and develop and deliver proactive solutions. And that's the key, proactive solutions for the student, a client, and everyone supporting those students and clients. Now, Dr. Rehack holds doctoral degrees in special education and behavior analysis, in addition to graduate level degrees in clinical and counseling psychology with a concentration in addictions. She's a member of many professional organizations, and she has worked in educational, community-based, home, and clinical settings, as well as the juvenile justice system. So she has a broad spectrum of knowledge and expertise, education, and experience. She knows what she's talking about, and she's very passionate about it, and she's doing what she can for the greater good. She's applied all of this experience to her behavior analysis, as well as other services she's provided through the International Institute for Behavioral Development. It's amazing work that she does and a proven track record of success, and so honored to have her back with us here on CUTV News Radio to talk about the incredible work she does and the positive nature of all of the work that she does as well. Dr. Rehack, thank you very much for joining us. I know you're a very busy person and you've got full days and a plate that's always full, but thanks for taking time out of your busy day today for the next 30 minutes to chat with me more about the sensational and very positive and effective work that you're doing. We welcome you back to CUTV News Radio Live.
Thank you, Jim, for the warm and welcoming introduction. I appreciate it. It's good to be back again talking with you.
Oh, it is our pleasure. Oh, our pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation last time. It was wonderful. It was riveting and filled with incredible, useful, vital, and impactful information. And a pleasure to have you back with us here on the broadcast as well. Let's dive right in and dissect it and talk about it more in terms of what are some of the ways professionals working in schools and healthcare industries behind the scenes, and of course in the scenes as well, as parents too, how can they all work together to bring more evidence-based processes and practices into not only therapy rooms and sessions, but where the kids typically are, classrooms and homes and community settings? And how can we get more kids into these more typical environments and ensure their health and safety and best interests at the same time?
Well, that's a great question. And to answer that, I mean, I think that it takes a level of willingness from every stakeholder involved in terms of truly being transparent with our motives. And that's vital to fostering authentic collaboration between different groups of people. Everybody has a lot of different levels of knowledge, different perspectives, different experiences, different trainings, different roles. So I think that it takes a willingness to have these critical conversations, to speak openly about what the needs actually are. And again, that willingness factor in terms of really listening and really mutually agreeing to try to work together for the greater good of everyone involved. I know myself included and many others, I'm still a I still work at Ball State University. I've worked at many different universities and many graduate level training programs. Professors, even at the undergraduate level, are really trying to help research to practice gap too, in terms of their students and increasing collaborative efforts, whether it's students, you know, through their internship placement programs or experience hours that are requirements for them, you know, to fulfill what's makes them eligible to receive their certification or licensure in a certain area, for them to actually be working in those settings. When I reflect on my own experiences, that training was vital to me to really learn, you know, authentically outside of the classroom setting. So I think that that's helpful in terms of bridging that gap. And again, just that willingness. There's a lot of parent training efforts going on in many different school districts, many different agencies, different parent groups, parent counseling is absolutely needed. Metro Kids is a magazine local to where I'm based in Pennsylvania and surrounding areas. We did an article last month, and I know this month in June, and they're continuing a series on mental health in terms of children. And again, just that cross-collaboration between mental and behavioral health care specialists and professionals and parents working truly together to solve these problems. So, you know, key decision makers sometimes are influenced by other variables outside of increases or decreases in behaviors, and that's just the reality of it. And that can create conflicts for everybody involved in terms of all those levels of influence and motivating factors. So there's no real easy equation in terms of, you know, simplifying these things from a scientific perspective, you know, versus the truth. But along that continuum, really trying to, you know, work together to disarm people who are less threatened. And again, coming from a base other than, you know, maybe their own unresolved childhood issues, misperceptions, projections, political agendas, really looking at the facts and what's going on and what's needed and working together, you know, in terms of preventative care. There's so many things that we can do now proactively to predict and prevent so many of these unnecessary issues.
Which is all very important, and that's the key to it all, exactly. You know, I understand there, you know, has been some question or conflict or possible even confusion since our last chat together. Sometimes, you know, you always get wonderful support, and I know you've had, and we've even had wonderful positive feedback in terms of the last conversation, and you've had a wealth of people who have concurred and supported and believed in and do believe in the phenomenal work that you're doing. But every once in a while, you do have some people who maybe they need it further understood, further appreciated, or further explained so they understand where you're coming from and what your positive goals are and your overall hope for the work that you do. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, and I think role defining is critical, you know, whenever you work with a team of professionals in any industry, in any setting. You know, whether you're a coach of children playing on a soccer team or field, everybody has their position and they may know how to play the other positions, but, you know, everybody has to have a basic level of knowledge or understanding of that person's role. So in terms of when I serve in, and I've served in the past, many others in the behavior analyst role, I would refer folks directly to the BACB.com. There's a wealth of information available there in terms of helping people understand our ethical codes of conduct that we're bound to, as well as those roles. And in Pennsylvania, I mean, we've really been a leading state in terms of innovating and different initiatives. There's an RVP initiative now in terms of ABA and PA efforts, among other initiatives, you know, past, present, and future. So again, stakeholders also sometimes, you know, at the state level, Commonwealth itself, and legislators working together also to make sure that the staff is available. I think also changes, I mean, the National Institute of Mental Health even is moving away from diagnoses in terms of their outcome of basic interest. Well, that makes people feel threatened, clearly, where that's their livelihood, you know, possibly is diagnoses. So, but the focus, again, more on the supports that are needed, what's actually needed. And there's a lot of implications, you know, in terms of what goes into a diagnosis. We talked briefly about that last time. But again, focus more on what's really relevant in terms of what's going on in that immediate environment, what are the behaviors of concern, what supports need to be put into place to help this child make progress. And again, in addition to the willingness factor, training has to be put into place. And with technology, that's easier than ever before. We're so blessed to live in a day and age where, you know, this technology is at our fingertips. So I would definitely defer to the Mental and Telebehavioral Health Institute. If you go to telehealth.org, they are the experts. I've taken many of their trainings myself and have different credentials through them as well. But the Telebehavioral Health Institute, they're based in Wyoming. I would highly recommend them in terms of resources. And if you are a mental behavioral health professional, I think there's 9 different categories of us at this point. There's a lot of great information in terms of practicing over state lines, even in safe and secure ways, also to reach families, children, school districts, other contracting entities, and still, you know, do that in a legal and ethical way where resources may be more limited. But I would definitely point people first to the BACB.com because, you know, there's even a registry there of certified behavior analysts. You can find those that are close to your location, register behavior technicians, and put those needed supports into place. There's some ambiguity in terms of the laws that govern these services, 1997 legislation, 2004 with IDEA and the reauthorization. So in terms of defining who is really qualified to be performing functional behavior assessments when children, youth are exhibiting disruptive behaviors or they're exhibiting their own learning, and the reality is that it's a certified behavior analyst is really needed in terms of, you know, when that analysis is critical, and again, really could change the trajectory and has changed the trajectory of innocent children's lives. So, you know, I've in the past had worked in many different school districts, and many of those districts had really become exemplary models by my standards in terms of really fine-tuning the referral processes, and allowing that BCBA to be the one to make that determination whether further assessment, further evaluation was needed. We worked with many, you know, doctors and other specialists in the medical realm too, in terms of really being able to isolate if it's only in response to instructional demands that these behaviors are occurring. Well, then we can do environmental modifications. We can put accommodations into place. Whereas if these behaviors are occurring across conditions, then that would indicate something medical is going on. So we worked with many medical professionals and teams in terms of, you know, they could do the med management and we were providing other behavioral health services. So these are really models that I'm hoping that more providers and groups and entities embrace. And then again, all those stakeholders work together. Parent training is critical. I mentioned that Metro Kids article where really that can go a long way in predicting and preventing mental health issues. You know, if a parent brings their child into a doctor, typically it's a very quick checkup and the doctor's going off of parent report most times, which sometimes isn't always reliable. And that's just the truth of the matter. So we've worked with doctors in the past to really provide more objective, not that parent input isn't a part of that process, but again, to have input from everyone involved. So it's really based on what the child's best interests and needs are.
Which is the key to it all. It's what the child's best interests and needs are. And that is your mission and your goal. It's a beautiful one to have. And we need more people like you doing the kind of work that you're doing, Dr. Rehak. And you eloquently laid all of that out in our previous conversation, as you're doing with part 2 of our series together. And I think it's a great thing. So kudos to you for, you know, making this part of your life's mission to want to do whatever you can for the good of of children. I mean, education and healthcare continue to evolve, but it sometimes seems that professionals can be sometimes in the day-to-day, you know, work that everybody has to do, sometimes can be far removed from their education and their actual training, everything that they developed in the early years. When new things come around that maybe challenge what they've been taught, and again, that happens in every industry. I mean, there was the printing press and newspapers and magazines and then radio and then television and now, you know, digital downloads, and you don't see LPs as much anymore, 8-track tapes. I mean, using an analogy in my world and media, it happens in life that new ideas evolve and new things are challenged and new things are incorporated. And, you know, and it's good because there would not be cures for diseases and other things if new things were not tested and tried, at least, and looked at and observed. So when new things come around that maybe challenge what one has been taught or has relied on upon throughout one's entire career, sometimes, you know, in terms of reaction, they have no choice but to get defensive because it feels like their very livelihood is threatened by advances in any field that it is. I mean, we're working in a world right now where technology is getting so advanced that it's, you know, enhancing things in many ways, but some people are fearful that it will, you know, take maybe their particular job away, whatever. But then there's retraining and there's reeducation and there's other things. So that sometimes does happen, doesn't it? Not just in the healthcare field, but in all fields.
Of course, right. This is going on in every industry. And the reality is our whole world has a right to improve and evolve. And we need to work together to help everyone do that. And technology, I've done multiple radio shows at this point, but my husband works at NBNC Network Building and Consulting. So, you know, he jokes he builds the internet and makes all this possible. He's a techie through and through in various aspects of the world. But I mean, in terms of all the technology that's available, and there's a lot of criticism going on, and again, I myself have even spoken about the importance of monitoring children and youth and their access to technology. But technology can really be used for good. And, you know, a very great teacher of mine once said, it's not the technology, it's the technology user. We have to make sure that we're educating children, youth, families, again, all of the stakeholders involved about technology and working together with technology specialists. I talked last time about the importance of specialists with inclusion in public schools. Specialists include IT specialists. So specialists of all kinds are needed. And again, just that respect, that mutual respect for each other's area of expertise, knowing what your area is and knowing what your areas are not, is equally as important in terms of promoting an ethical work culture. You know, I'm definitely focused on student needs, and especially when I'm in that behavior analyst role, that's my job, is to advocate for what's needed. We also need to advocate for the support for staff and personnel. If you look at current public school education data, teachers feel overwhelmed, very unsupported, and just overworked, underpaid. So you also have to look at the factors that they need to mitigate on a daily basis in terms of, you know, their teaching requirements, all of the increased requirements in schools right now academically, and their stress levels, and how that, you know, we can't put more pressure on teachers than we do on parents. Like, parents can't be attacking teachers. It's easy to point fingers and place blame, but you can't hold each other to higher levels of expectations than you're willing to hold yourself. Does that make sense? I think that willingness factor as well, in terms of really all playing on the same team. And that's how I play. I can't really play otherwise. So I don't work in all places because that won't work for me if everybody's not being truthful and honest. I can see how things develop and escalate to the point that they do because people do feel threatened, and, you know, it just continues to escalate then. And not everybody has, you know, right thoughts and right words or motives. And I think that that's, you know, part of the problem as well. So I don't think that we should be beating up and attacking schools and saying that it's all the school's fault either, and I want to make that clear. I think a lot of great educators are getting burned out. Research even shows that's happening and leaving the field of education because of all the politics and the bureaucracy and feeling unsupported, you know, not just, you know, within the schools and their administrative teams, but also because of, you know, how parents and communities sometimes are treating them too. So I think everybody involved needs to change at every level of influence.
That's very important. So very, very true. Absolutely. Right. You know, you got into this field because you really wanted to help people and help those around those people better understand and appreciate it all, what got these people, you know, into these fields. And it must have been for the same reason you did. I mean, why else would you do this work and, you know, the work that you're so passionate about and that you love so much? Tell us about that. Why do you think that, you know, what do you think actually happened?
I think, again, it's just like with a student, these variables that govern human behavior, the science of humans, they don't discriminate based on age or industry, profession, you know, race, any gender. And so too many demands, not enough reinforcement. I think that we are bombarding teachers with, you know, so many new requirements, all of the different, asking them to take data that's not needed. Asking them to do things that really just, you know, if you look at the, sometimes it takes a willingness too to pull yourself out of that and really look at things from a different level. It's like when you get on an airplane and, you know, things look a lot smaller when you get a different perspective. So really looking at what is actually needed and what isn't. But I think that that's, you know, huge in terms of just modifying even expectations for teachers. So that increases their willingness factors as well, and helping them feel supported. You know, for years, and I have multiple degrees and credentials, but I also have counseling degrees, and it's like sometimes I would just allow teachers to vent, to get it out. They need somebody to talk to so they can focus on the kids. So I think also looking at increasing support for staff and personnel, we've been doing this for parent counseling so they can be better parents, but maybe counseling for those, you know, working in schools too, so that they can stay focused on what's needed as well. I think that, you know, you have, teachers are human beings also, and they have a lot going on. And again, anybody that's a parent, if you have more than one child, think, have more empathy and compassion for your child's teacher who has how many students in their classroom, and everything that they have to deal with as well. So, but again, it's that willingness to communicate, to collaborate, to really try to understand each other's perspectives. I think that that is essential. You know, this whole safe to say something movement is all focused on student safety. Of course, we need to make sure that students are safe, but we need to make sure that all students are safe and that all staff are safe. And that, well, what are we really saying when we say safe to say something? Like, somebody should feel safe enough to share their own experience. So I think it's, again, just breaking down those barriers, and it takes a village.
Right. It really, really does.
Yeah.
It comes down to that. Everybody working for the greater good, not one side versus the other. And like you and I were talking about before we went live on the air, we're living in a world right now where everything is either or. Everything is extreme. You either have to believe in this, but if you do, that means you cannot believe in that, and you can't come together, and everybody takes one side versus the other. In terms of looking for the middle ground, looking for ways to blend, to work together, to come up with solutions and perspectives and ideas and ways to make society, you know, a better place. I mean, make the world a better place in so many ways. And, you know, not every doctor is a diagnostician, of course. Not every teacher or administrator is a specialist. These things are very complex, and you need someone who is very specialized. So if people, you know, get this stuff wrong, it can really change the entire trajectory of a child's life because they're not getting what they need. We reached this point where the eyeball test really doesn't work anymore, right?
That's very true. That's very true. And that is the beauty of behavior analysis. From my perspective, again, I've worked in many different roles and capacities, but really that direct observation component, those repeated direct observations, and behavior analysts aren't the only ones that do that. Lots of different industries do that, you know, in their spheres for different reasons and collect data and read the data. I'm talking specifically in terms of what we're discussing today, and just that careful analysis and assessment of really interviewing all of the stakeholders involved, understanding their perspectives, directly observing the child across environments, across settings. If results from those descriptive, more indirect methods are inconclusive, then they would know that a certified behavior analyst would know that a third step, actual environmental manipulations, would be required to test those hypotheses, and also provide really critical information in terms of whether something medical may actually be going on, and then to consult with child assessors, not if behaviors are happening at school or another medical professional. So, and again, those professionals that do understand these things, and everybody working on teams really ought to at this point. I'm not the only one. There's lots of us, again, go to the BAC website. These laws have existed for a long time too. We should not have our efforts impeded or disrupted either, beginning to not an attack for trying to do our job. So that's the flip side of the point as well. Really taking that time, we take that time to do our due diligence and trying to work with everybody and understand their perspectives. We would ask for that same professional courtesy and level of respect as well. And again, it just really, schools are doing a great job with school-wide positive behavior supports. We're hyper-focused on teaching kids to be cooperative, to be respectful, to be kind. We need to treat each other that way as professionals as well, and parents and everybody in the community. And whether, you know, it's on social media, whether it's, and not to say that there isn't a time, you know, everybody experiences the full continuum and range of emotions. And sometimes, you know, that's needed in terms of, it's absolutely necessary to speak up. But in terms of, you know, other ulterior motives and agendas to suppress people who are trying to speak the truth and trying to do their jobs, you know, you're not going to align with me by behaving that way. So again,
exactly,
building bridges,
yeah.
But it takes a willingness for everybody to really disarm and just be honest about what's really happening.
Exactly. That's right. Are you still optimistic for the future? And if so, what are some of the things that you suggest?
I am. And, you know, maybe that's a detriment, my own detriment at least.
Lose that optimism.
Yeah. I think that it's possible. I think that, you know, all we're human. So we all make mistakes. And I think that if we're all willing to reflect and see where we could have done things differently and really just be more humble about that, and sometimes that you do have to take a step back. And I'm one that I will be the one, if I have to be, to remove myself from a situation because I know some others just aren't at that level of capacity to understand. Sometimes that's what it takes, is just some time and space. So a lot of the things that we've been preaching and teaching with kids for years and years, especially with educators and parents, we really need to start thinking through how we are treating each other and applying some of those same teachings to ourselves. And again, we're kind of sending mixed messages to kids if we're telling them that all these things are expected, but that's not how we're treating each other behind the scenes and in the scenes. So, you know, and it's with politics.
That's
it's,
right.
It's at every level of influence, and it needs.
Exactly. So in listening to these episodes, what is the first step somebody should take? What resources? We've got about 90 seconds left to this episode, and look forward to chatting with you soon. And we've got a TV video interview coming up together in July. It's going to be an honor and a pleasure to meet you and the studio and explore some more there. Looking forward to that next month. But in the meantime, for people that are listening, where should they go to learn more information?
Go directly to the BACB.com. There's a registry there, again, of board certified behavior analysts, registered behavior technicians. If you're in TA,
so that's BACB. Yeah, BACB.com for a registry of board certified behavior analysts and registered behavior technicians close to where they're located. That's BACB.com. You should go to. And then you also had mentioned earlier telehealth.org for more information for mental behavioral health professionals, including behavior analysts, counselors, social workers, psychologists, et cetera, about legally and ethically practicing over state lines for those who have more limited access to properly trained and certified licensed professionals where they live. That's great as well. So good resources out there, right?
Yes, definitely. The resources are available.
Perfect.
Make sure we're using them.
That's right. Perfect.
Thank
well,
you.
Dr. Rehak, it's always a joy and a blessing to have you with us here on the show and sharing all this incredible information with us. We appreciate it and looking forward to meeting with you soon. And thanks so very much for joining us here on CUTV News Radio Live. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. You as well. Take good care and we'll talk
to you. All right. You have a Absolutely. Absolutely. You take care. Jim Masters here for all of us at CUTV News Radio Live. Thank you for joining us as well. Always a pleasure to have you with us around the world, tuned in and listening to our live broadcasts on the award-winning CUTV News Radio Live. For the entire team here, stay tuned. I'll be back in 30 minutes with another great guest and live interview here exclusively on CUTV News Radio Live. Till then, bye for now and have a great day.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.